The place to be is living free. Living free in Tennessee.
Welcome to Living Free in Tennessee, where we talk about building the life you choose on your terms. Today is Friday, January 31st, 2025, and it's the last day of the month. Are you ready?
For what?
The last day of the month.
I like the ducks and the sheep and the dogs. Have absolutely no reason to care about the fact that it's the last day of the month.
He's going to care when I start asking him financial questions all weekend, though. What was that long silence? See, we're on an audio podcast, and you just spoke with body language. We can't do that here.
No idea what you're talking about, so I have no context, and I have nothing because...
He's got
I don't
nothing.
Know what we're talking about.
Well, we have to have our financial report from the farm in the first week. It's the new year's goals to keep up on that so that we're better with tracking our expenses and finances, which means, you know, it's happening this weekend. Okay. Yeah. I'll probably be a little grumpy when I do it too, because, you know, I love doing paperwork, right?
Yeah, hopefully that'll all come to an end soon.
Well, it's not going to come to an end because there's always paperwork to do. That noise can be heard on the podcast too. Do it on your leg. He's fighting me today, guys.
I'm trying to do it louder.
Why are you being a jerk? He all of a sudden he's talking quiet, shrugging his shoulders instead of saying no, and drumming his hands on the counter. It's like you turn the camera on and this dude like shuts up, except for the days where he doesn't shut up. Is it because you haven't had enough coffee today?
I mean, I had a decent amount of coffee today.
Okay. Anyway, today we're going to talk about sheep. We're going to talk about him being alone on the homestead, which means you need to think about what to say about that. Oh, and the mailman's here early. And we're going to talk about the new feed source we found, which I'll have to look up on the fly. So I was literally complaining last week or the week before last about the fact that all of the feed providers in the state of Tennessee have basically stopped doing it. And the ones who hadn't had stopped doing soy, and then they stopped doing it soy free. And so we've been getting feed like from 1,000 miles away or something. I don't even know. We've been ordering in like a premium organic soy free brand. And the problem is that that particular brand is not working well with our ducks. And so then we've been supplementing the vitamins, and literally I got off the live stream and there was a new source. So we're going to talk about that. I'm super excited. I was like getting ready to take a road trip to Texas to buy a truckload of feed and a trailer because I was over it. I was over it. So, hey, Tracy, listening in between work calls. Well, welcome to the live stream. Hopefully I'll see you later. Hopefully I'll see you this weekend. We'll talk about that after the show. Anyway, before we dive into that, I want to talk about our featured event of the show, which, guess what it is, guys? You know what it is.
No.
Who's coming to the Living Free in Tennessee Spring Workshop?
Oh.
Who? Tactical will be there. I'll be there. Who else is going to be there?
I've heard Jack.
Jack Spirko will be there. Who else?
I'm sure Poog will be here.
John Pugliano will be here. What about the Knife Man?
Is he ever not here?
Yeah, Patrick Rohrman will be here. Who else? Dog Dude.
Oh, Joel.
Joel Riles. Yeah, guess who else?
I don't know.
Emily Zanotti, who you've never met. Okay. Do you know who that is?
Not off the top of my
head. This is really fun. She's doing an urban homesteading project at her house in East Nashville. She's got 3 kids. She's got a great sense of humor, and she's going to talk about like backyard food growing activism that she's doing in Nashville. But I know her from my days in public policy work. So we're also connected through that. And then it turns out Matthew Sersley knows her because he went to law school with her husband. So that's a small world. She's a great presenter. She's got a great sense of humor. And it looks like she's going to stay for the whole event, not just her speaking section. So that'll be fun. You guys are going to love getting to know her as well. She's got she's got raised beds and chickens, and she knows how to cook. And yeah, it's going to be a really fun one. And she knows how to get things changed politically. Like, she's worked in political action for many, many years before she became more of a reporter. So that's a new one you guys haven't heard of. Alan Booker.
Yeah, I want to actually sit down and have a conversation with this event.
Yep. Alan's coming. He's doing 2 2.5-hour sessions. So there's a lot more people coming, like Carrie Brown and other speakers. You're going to love all of the presentations. The tickets go on sale tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Central at livingfreeintennessee.com. We ask for a $200 deposit when you sign up, and you just go there, and the big red button will show up on the homepage if you hit refresh at 9 a.m. You can also go to the workshop page, and it'll show up there at 9 a.m. as well. Yeah, Beth Emily, it's going to be super fun. It was slow. I mean, honestly, the spring workshop agenda was a little bit slow coming together because of me. I was a little fried after the whole summer leading into the fall, and I just had to take some time off to focus on making sure coffee was getting out the door and redo some things here at the house. And after taking that break, I was like, okay, spring workshop. And I was like, well, I know Alan's going to come. I wanted to get Uncle Mud here, but he wasn't in the budget for this spring workshop. What I think I'm going to do with him is, he's the rocket mass heater guy. I think we're going to do a standalone workshop with him this year if we can. Just because I think I want to do with him like a build from beginning to end if we can. And I don't think that's in the card on the spring workshop. Hoping to get him to Self-Reliance Festival as well. And then it was interesting because I had a lot more homesteading topics this time. And we usually do homesteading and business. And then the rest of it just totally came together. Looking forward to building the compost pile with Jack, as well as doing some biochar stuff. And mostly Jack's going to be free to hang out and talk to people, which is good. And in the Q&A session, when we like brainstorm how to function stack the greenhouse over the swim spa, I think both he and Alan Booker on deck for that is going to be superb. Just all the ideas we can come across with a blank slate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's going to happen tomorrow, 9 a.m. Central. I also want to thank two sponsors today. The first sponsor I want to thank, I was like literally just working on preparing my taxes so that somebody else could do my taxes for me. AgoristTaxAdvice.com. Matthew Sersley from AgoristTaxAdvice.com has two primary things he does now. One is the advising package I talked to you all about, where he analyzes your finances and then lets you know different structures you can choose, how the write-offs work, how to document them in case, you know, somebody has to look at how you audited, documented them. I almost said the A word. And that's over at AgoristTaxAdvice.com/LFTN. You can sign up for his free newsletter that sends out different tax tips every week or so. But he also does tax preparation. I know he's getting towards the end of being able to accept tax preparation clients for 2024 taxes. So if you were thinking of using him, I highly recommend reaching out to him, AgoristTaxAdvice.com. And our second sponsor today is Discount Mylar Bags. Discount Mylar Bags has been supporting us since the moment we launched a sponsorship and before. Toby at Discount Mylar Bags has been super helpful to my Hollow Roast coffee business because, of course, you start out and you need bags, and he knew how to source them in bulk for less money. That's right. And then he passed on those savings to me. He does the same for you at discountmylarbags.com. With that, it's time for a question. How are we going to figure out how much concrete I'm buying this afternoon? So what's the process?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what concrete you're planning on buying, so let's start there.
Okay. The only reason I'm putting concrete in the prepper pantry is you told me to. Yeah. So I'm not choosing the concrete. I'm not choosing how thick it's going to go on. You tell me what I'm doing, and I'll get it done.
Yeah, and that requires, like, I don't know, deciding where you're going to buy it. Just say Lowe's, then going on Lowe's website and picking a concrete that you're going to use.
Okay.
And then seeing what the coverage of that's going
to
be.
Is there any reason not to use this stuff?
No.
Why don't we just use one of those bags?
If they're still good.
Okay, well, let's check that after.
Okay.
Yeah. I say we use it up. And it's stronger than the other concrete. And then when we fill the hole, we'll fill that with actual concrete. And then skim coat over the top of that.
Yeah.
So you ready to help me move stuff out of the way?
We get to that point.
It means disconnecting the water softener for me to be able to get this done.
Yeah.
So, but I would love to get it done this weekend when it's warm enough to cure half of the prepper pantry.
Yeah, about that.
What?
I still need to move sheep.
Okay.
And I'm not ready to move sheep.
Okay, when did the sheep need to move?
Like 2 days ago.
I see.
Last week.
Okay. How long is that going to take to get ready for?
I don't know. I've got to find the resources to do it.
Okay. Does that mean you need to go way up the hill again?
Maybe.
Are we putting them way back up the hill, or are we just rotating them up again?
They're going up paddock up from where they are.
Okay.
But the way I'm having to do it is a lot more complicated, and I also have an extraordinary amount of resources tied up in the current paddock situation because of the freeze, and nothing is normal down there right now. So I'm trying to get back to a normal setup.
Is that something you want extra hands on? Is that something that would be helpful, or is it more that you need to sit around and figure out where all your reels went?
It's more of like, I need to figure out which reels I can pull, and that's going to be like, do I close them off from this section so I can go pull those two reels from over there? Or do I double this reel back and pull one of the two reels off of this? It's something I got to go like look at to see what makes sense.
Well, I am doing a presentation on lessons learned from 3 years of sheep. And one of the things I'm going to want to talk more about is the reels situation. And how many reels do you have right now total?
Probably 16, maybe.
So he has 16 reels, and he's not sure where they all are right now because we had sheep here, we had sheep there, we had a freeze, we took some to the butcher, we had to do cattywampish things with the paddocks. So there's reels from the top of the pasture to the bottom of the pasture, last I checked, right?
Yeah, about mid all the way down.
Yeah, and then there are probably some reels here too.
I think I actually got them all from over here.
Okay. So in order to do a paddock, how many reels do you need?
Right now for their next paddock, I need minimum 2, 4, 6, 8.
8 reels?
Yeah, because I need to run a third wire on at least 2 sides.
Yeah, so he's running 3 wires instead of 2. He needs half of his reels for 1 paddock. And also with babies, they can scoot under the wire.
And that was the other thing I was about to say is we're also to the point to where babies are starting to go under wire.
Yeah, so he needs more reels than usual. Typically, what do you need for a paddock?
For the paddock they're going to, normally I would be using 6.
Okay, so he's using a few more reels. And then often you set it up so 1 reel is covering 2 paddocks. Mm-hmm. So then it sets him up to have the next paddock ready to go through. And how many reels do you pull per rotation on average?
I'm getting set up for their next 4 paddocks. And for that block, it would normally be 2, 4, 6, 8? It would normally be 8 reels total.
So normally 8 reels for 4 paddocks, set up in a way that he can pull a couple and run a couple to rotate them while double using, like, one wall might use one, like half the wall is used for one paddock and half the wall is used for the other, or one run, I guess. Wall is not the right word.
Yeah, and it's kind of a situation where that area has 2 sides that are permanent fencing, so I'm basically just putting a plus sign through the middle of it and then 2 reels top and bottom. And so when they're on the lower paddocks, they're those top reels aren't necessary, but when they go to the upper paddocks, the bottom reels aren't necessary. So once they move up to the upper paddocks, I'll go pull the bottom reels and go up above them and start setting up further up the hill.
Okay. Are we going to get over into the new pasture that we need to break?
That depends on time.
Okay. Yep. We have a new pasture from another neighbor that we're allowed to run sheep on. And the problem is the first time setting up the fence on new pasture, which is brushier, is an enormous pain in the neck. He's going to have to probably cut down some small trees.
No, that's a definite.
Yeah, and he's going to have to cut through the brush so that nothing's shorting out. Then we get the sheep in there, and then they eat it down. And then he comes back with the mower and mows anything they didn't eat. And what we're trying to do with the sheep, guys, is we're rotating them so they're not on the same paddock twice in the same 60-day period of time, when at all possible. We had a non-ideal situation with the ice this year where they stayed in with access to the barn for extra long. And then also not overgrazing, because if they overgraze, they'll go down lower, and then they're more likely to get exposed to barber pole worm if those are there. And that's the whole, like, by moving the sheep, we avoid a lot of the potential parasite problems. Plus, we have sheep that have good immune systems.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and now we have a lot of sheep. We have 11 babies. And how many girls do we have? 10?
11 ewes, one ram, 11 babies.
Yeah. So that brings us up to 23 sheep.
Which is by property. Far the most we've had so
That's
far.
That's the most we've ever had. And it's time, actually, to move the ram over here with whoever we decide the ram's going to live with. So that's something he and I need to look at and discuss, because on one hand, the easiest thing is to move Bruni over here with her two boys. Oh, no, she doesn't have two boys. You know what? The bottle sheep with the two boys is who we should move over with him.
Yeah.
And the only problem is that he'll try to breed her at about 8 weeks. So.
Well, hopefully she ain't going to be over here that long.
Well, we don't want her to, yeah. Why? What are you doing with the ram?
I mean, my thought is, like, hopefully by that time, we'll be able to wean.
Oh, some of the boys.
The boys, and all the boys are going to come over here.
Yeah, so it's going to be a big sausage fest at my house with the sheep. But it is kind of nice to be able to keep the boys all the way over here separate from the girls all the way over there, because they're not staring at each other across the wire longingly wondering how to test the wire, which can be an issue when you're trying to keep a breeding schedule. So can leaving the young rams with their mothers too long.
Yeah.
And the official number is 3 months. Our rams were with the females for 3 months and 2 weeks. And it was that 2 week period of time that everybody got pregnant, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe a little early. So I'll be diving a little deeper into how we can wean these guys sooner while still maintaining their health, because having access to their mother's milk, I think, is super helpful for their immune systems and for their growth. And at a time of year when the grass is not growing that great.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. Speaking of bottle lambs, tell me how that went while I was out of town.
The first 2 or 3 days was excruciating, because I was trying to go back into the normal by myself routine, with the caveat of giving a bottle to two lambs 4 times a day. And by day three, it's like, tomorrow, regardless of whether it's a good idea or not, they're going down to 3 times a day. It's just going to happen. And if they die, they die. Cause I can't keep up with this. And so I came up with a schedule to bump them down to 3 times a day. Fortunately, their mother is starting to develop a little bit more of an udder. So even cutting them back of feeding, they also started eating a little bit less, which implies they're getting more from mom. So that kind of just worked out in my favor. And then now it's to a point I'm trying to get them down to twice a day.
Yeah, I wrote a schedule for you to move them towards twice a day that involves moving feedings around over the next week or two. I also want to start reducing the temperature of what we feed them a little bit so that they can drink cold milk. But, I mean, if her bag catches up, they may not need it any longer. Who knows? But they need it right now.
And they're also almost about to the point to where they're going to start actually eating grass and hay.
Yeah, and you can give them creep. And,
and so there's a couple of the older babies that are already, you know, I've got a couple of pictures of them chomping on some hay or, you know, they're trying to squeeze in between moms to get into the creep bowl.
Okay. Well, that's cool. They are actually officially old enough to be at 2 bottles a day right now.
Yeah.
And that would be 2 8-ounce bottles a day. So 8 ounces each. They took 6 ounces this morning each.
Yeah.
So
they ate more this morning than they have in like 3 or 4 days.
But they went longer last night because you adjusted the time. So that's what I was like. Well, if we move everything a half an hour at a time here and there, they're not going to die. And they're just going to eat a little bit more. And eventually your goal is 7 and 7, right? Or 8 and 8.
Something like that.
Yeah, somewhere around there. So I started writing the schedule to move us that direction without just pulling the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
And probably by next week, we'll be down to 2 feedings a day.
Yeah.
And if we have them, if we're able to move them here, which I don't even know that I have any pasture here that's worth a darn, actually. That's the concern.
Well, I mean, even with, I think there's one paddock up there that might have some decent field hay in it.
Okay.
And other than that, like, they're going to pretty much be on hay until something starts growing.
Yeah. Well, and things should, like, looking at the weather, it looks like things should start growing.
Yeah. That's, I'm hoping so.
Yeah. So we're going to have a 70-degree day on Monday. So we've just gone from 5 degrees before I left to nothing. Like, when I got back, we still had icicle towers coming out of stone cracks on the side of the hill. Those actually might still be there. They were still there yesterday because it was so thick, they hadn't melted yet. To today, it's 68 degrees. Tomorrow, it's 67 degrees. Sunday, it's 60-something. And Monday, it's 70 high.
Yeah.
And then the lows are in the 50s, which from a wood heating standpoint is kind of a pain in the butt because it's very easy to then overheat your house.
Yeah.
But then it gets kind of cold at night. So I've been kind of keeping my stove low and slow this morning.
Yeah.
So that there's something there. But I think by Monday, I'm probably letting it go out again.
I've been letting mine go out.
Yeah. Today. And then, you know, go from there. So... So it's almost like it's instantly spring. And I have a tradition of planting my first set of peas on the 1st of February, which is tomorrow. And my plan is tomorrow, because it's not going to be raining its butt off, guess what I'm going to plant in that raised bed? Peas. Why not? I'm going to put peas and radishes in, and then I start playing seed roulette in the garden, where every 2 weeks I reseed things that I've already seeded, or I start putting new things in. And the win this year is I actually got my Swiss chard seedlings started, meaning that the seeds in the soil. And that's because I did the show yesterday, how to start seeds, which I was originally going to do from Mama Sauce's house, and it just was not possible there. So I was like, well, while I'm talking about starting seeds, I will also be starting seeds in my kitchen, which is why I came to you from the kitchen for that podcast episode. And so I've got that started, and I've got the fennel, and I've got brassica, I've got broccoli, and one other thing, lettuce. So those are starting. I'll probably in the next week or two start herbs like dill and any other herbs like marjoram or tarragon. Cilantro, I should have already started. It's about time to transplant cilantro. So I'm behind the eight ball on that. So I might actually buy cilantro if we want to have cilantro here. And then I'll be putting off starting, I'll start peppers and then I'll start tomatoes around mid-March-ish into, mid-March into April for the tomato starts. And then that's it. And you know, by the time the soil is up to 75 degrees, I'm going to be putting green bean seeds in and cucumber seeds in. I just direct seed those. Squash seeds in. The other urgency here is to get the garden beds ready to plant into now. So it's already that time in Tennessee where everything on the homestead needs to be done now. And so what a lot of homesteaders do is burn themselves out right now. What I'm going to do is choose which thing I'm doing on Saturday and do that thing. And then when it's done, look at the next thing I might have energy to do and just work that way as best I can, because it doesn't help me to string myself out. It doesn't help the homestead function better when I try to do everything at once. And so I do it all half-assed. So this is the year I'm trying to not be a half-ass on most things, which is why I wanted to get into that concrete this weekend so that I get part of it done. It can cure and then we can do the other part. And then I can put that all back together. But that also means I need your help moving utilities.
Yeah, and I don't even have a list of what I need for that. So.
Okay. Well, maybe we could sit down when we're tired and make a list over dinner.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. He's giving me that look because I'm the one who's like, never mind, I don't want to do the list. I'm too tired to think about the list. But if we sit here at dinner, I'm more likely to do the list.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to do was set you up with a phone call with an architect.
That would be nice.
Yeah, because I don't think I'm going to build my house up there where we want to build the barn, even though my house is inadequate, because it just seems like a big expense to me.
Okay.
We did a thought experiment, guys, where I was like, what if instead of building a barn, I built an actual functional, naturally built home that's designed to, you know, take advantage of its south-facing aspects and all of that from an energy efficiency standpoint. We've already got water and power up there. Like, why not? I build my house there and then I turn my house into a barn and event center. And he was talking and I was like, just hear me out. I'm not going to do this, but let's talk about it anyway. And in some ways that would be a huge relief, but in other ways I'd need to find $100,000 at least. And that's a problem for me. So, the problem being this house, like every time I turn around, there's another $20,000 structural problem with it. So I'm a little tired of those.
Yeah. But you're starting to run out of those.
Yeah.
I mean, we got the proper pantry and the mudroom to finalize.
Well, the moisture problem's not fixed. And that's actually that's what's going to make me smash this and start over.
I need to get the time this summer to deal with that one.
Yeah, well, I've already got things we've done in here that need to be redone because of that.
Okay.
So the question is, can that be fixed in the current state of my home, or does it need to be demolished and raised 12 inches?
I think we need to get that one corner dealt with.
Yep.
But.
Yeah, so. That's the bummer, guys. You end up with the house on your homestead that's on your homestead. Okay, next up, I have the best kitchen vent hood ever, and it works. This has been the longest installation in history for a kitchen vent hood. So, like, last spring, Nancy Alexander gave me a vent hood that she had that they never installed. And they'd originally bought it for a different kitchen. And then she had been sorting through stuff in her barn, and there was this commercial vent hood in there that's, what is it, 40-ish inches wide, so it's wider than my stove. And she's like, do you want that? Because maybe you can use it in your roasting shack. And I was like, maybe I can put it in my kitchen. And so it came back, and it just sat in front of my house, tempting me to want to have a vent hood. I didn't even have a vent hood in my kitchen. And it was frustrating because we needed to run – we needed to put a hole in the roof, which got done. And then we needed to run ducting. And then we needed to hook up the ducting. And then there was a big beam in the way. And then we had to put a 90-degree. It was like this whole story of how many steps can we add to just simply installing a vent hood? And then we get it all done and there's no chimney cap. And then I go to order a chimney cap, and luckily my Nighthawk was there. He's like, no, get one that flaps open so that it doesn't cause your heat to go out the top of your house when it's not in use. And that thing then finally arrived. I had to special order that. And then he went to install it and needed tin snips and didn't have them, or tin, like the ducting crimpers, whatever those are called.
Yeah.
And then I went out of town for a week, and sometime while I was out of town, I got a text from Nighthawk saying that my vent hood worked. So yesterday, for the first time since April of 2024, getting the hood, I got to use it. And I haven't had a hood in here since October of 2023. So it was very exciting to make fried breakfast sausage and have all of that stuff go up instead of out. What do you think of that?
I think it's amusing that I actually have a functional hood in my kitchen that I literally never use. And every now and then, for whatever reason, I get really irritated because the lights on that hood just decide to turn themselves on. But literally, I never, like, I'm actually half tempted to just disconnect and cap the wires going into that, because I just never use it.
You fry bacon there without it on?
We fry bacon, but yes, if I do fry bacon, then...
So the whole purpose of the hood is to suck those oils up so they don't go all over the walls.
I also don't seem to have a problem with oil all over the
wall. I don't believe you.
Okay.
I don't believe you. Anyway, this is basically... I've gotten to the point now where consumer-grade kitchen things seem to not work.
That's because they don't.
And so the commercial hood works. The only reason your hood works is it's old enough to be one from the time when hoods kind of worked. And it vents to the outside and doesn't recirculate back in the room. But, yeah. So my dishwasher, we thought it broke, but it didn't break. And I was already like, I just got to get a commercial dishwasher in here because dishwashers last 2 to 3 years and cost $600 to $800, some of them $1,200. And then the computer goes out on them most often. And then that's almost as much as getting your new dishwasher, right? And yeah, they don't do a good job of cleaning the stupid dishes, wherein a commercial dishwasher takes 90 seconds to do the load and they actually work. And those break but can be repaired. And it's a pain in the neck to repair them. And you use different detergents for them, but still, the basic concept is there. Really hot water blasting dishes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was already like looking again at getting a commercial dishwasher in here. My refrigerator by the end of the year is going to be replaced with a commercial refrigerator. Same thing, costs more to repair it, but then like this thing freezes food, doesn't keep food cold, drops water on the floor from time to time. Like it's just not good. And that's, you know, standard people's experience. It's like, what? When did we move to a world where all of our appliances just don't work? It's terrible. Have you guys seen that meme where it's like the olive green fridge and it's like, I am time itself. I will still be running, you know, when, whatever.
Oh, man,
meanwhile, the fridge I have now is 1.5 years old and I'm like, I gotta get rid of that thing.
I can't remember who it was, but somebody, I heard somebody saying on a video the other day about like their grandfather took the government up on their offer to buy the old refrigerator that he had had plugged in his garage since like 1962. And the thing still worked.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a long explanation for this, but basically they're building stuff now so that it will break so that you go buy a new one. And I don't care what people tell you. I can actually elaborate through all of that.
Yeah, it's sad, but it is what it is. We have a Brat Pack now.
Huh?
You know that picture you sent me of the 5 little baby sheep under the tree?
Yeah.
They're the Brat Pack.
Okay.
'Cause they're going to cause problems for the next 2 months.
Why?
'Cause they'll test fencing. They'll get up into the dog feed. It's the brat pack. What happens when you have like adolescent sheep is they behave like adolescent sheep. Yeah, I think it's fun, but yeah. Packrat says they're auctioning off a Nashville Kroger. There's a big stainless Hobart dishwasher for sale. Is it an undercounter one, Packrat, or is it like the big pull-down one? I'm looking for the undercounter one. I actually found one in East Tennessee listed for $1,200, which is not that much more than a replacement dishwasher, but it's used, and it's an undercounter one, and it's only been used like 6 months. It's not a Hobart, though. Hobart's a better brand. But yeah, it's always that balance between how much I'm going to spend and, you know, getting the best brand. But for sure, I'm very into commercial dishwashers. So that may happen. I've been wanting to do this for what, 3 years now?
Something like that.
Yeah. I was going to put it outside in the outside kitchen, but yeah, no, now it's probably going into the inside kitchen. Guess what's starting this weekend?
No idea.
Operation Eyesore. Okay. Tactical loves this game.
We'll see how much you actually get to play it this weekend.
Why?
I'm hearing a gradual, unrealistic list of we're going to do Operation Eyesore and pour concrete and move sheep and do this and do that and make lists of things we need to move the water softener. And it's like, yeah, you're going to get one of those things done. So let me know which one you want to do when.
I want to start with the concrete because that's the first step of Operation Eyesore.
Okay.
Because getting the place to where I can put things away is important.
Okay.
So why are you looking skeptical? Is it because you're not willing to pull the shit out?
No. There's not that much to pull out of the way. From over there.
There's a water softener, and I think I'm going to get rid of the water softener. So if somebody wants to buy one, let me know. I'll sell it to you for $200. It's a Culligan, and I'm going to put in the other thing.
Agreed.
The water whatever thing, whatever that's called. What's it called?
I don't remember. It's the electrical version of a water softener.
Yeah, it suspends the minerals in the liquid in a way that they don't stick to things unless you leave it, the water in the pipes too long, and then it undoes that. And it's a, it's not an ionizer. It's a descaler. It's an electric descaler. There's mixed reviews about how well it works, but I thought we'll try it. So that was, because it's smaller, because the water softener takes up so much room. And then if I have to go back to a water softener, I'll cross that bridge when I do. I'm only softening my hot water anyway to save my appliances. I do not have the cold water hooked up to that because I actually want the minerals in the water that comes out of the ground here. Yeah. And a water softener just strips everything out of the water. And then you got to take supplemental vitamins to make up for the minerals that are perfectly reasonable and in the water coming out of the ground.
Yeah.
So that's the deal. Okay, so let's talk about the new feed source. Let me look it up. So did you look at their price list when I sent it to you?
No, I actually already tried to go back in history and find that and can't.
Yeah? Okay. Well, let me see. I've got, it's called Boontop Farm, and they are located, so B-O-O-N-E, Top Farm. And then, of course, what's happening here is I can't actually look at them. There we go. They are in, where are they at? They're in, I think, Hickman County? No, Centerville. So Centerville's got a lot going on in the homestead world as far as Tennessee goes. It's one of the hot spots for homesteader and regenerative living. And Boontop Farms, also, I was talking to them, and they basically said they got frustrated that all of the other feed providers stopped providing feed. And then also like the price of going to, to Kentucky to get the feed didn't make sense for their budget. So then they found a source they could work with, and they posted that they were going to start doing this, and they're taking pre-orders. And basically the way they're doing it, guys, is they're getting it out of Alabama. And they have non-GMO for pig, chicken, quail, sheep. They have goat mineral. They have dairy cow. They have finishing grains for cow, corn, crack corn, horse pellets, and alfalfa pellets. And when I asked them if they have soy-free, which they do, they have chicken, no soy, no corn. They let me know that the protein in there is not fish-based. It is peanut-based, which is super exciting. It's 16% protein, so that's the one thing we need to think about for our egg layers because it might be a bit low.
So they're getting the feed from Alabama?
Yeah.
Well, then we need to find out what the brand name is because the current feed that the ducks are on also comes from Alabama.
Does it have peanut in it?
I don't know.
No, it does not. It has fish emulsion. So, yeah. So we'll talk to them about that, but that's actually really exciting if you're anywhere in Tennessee that you can drive to. And the other thing is I'm guessing that once they get this off the ground, having distribution locations would work in other parts of the state. So they're new. It's Boontop Farms. Just check them out on, I mean, they're mostly on Facebook. Let's see if they have a website. No website. So you'll have to find them on Facebook to get that done. But I wanted to throw that out there because I was just complaining about not having a feed source for us in the state. So,
which it's somewhat amusing that that's about the same location as our original feed source.
Yeah, it's really close to where MPS Farms was, but they just, yeah. MPS stopped doing it.
Yeah, they stopped a lot of stuff.
Well, I mean, they stopped the soy and we stopped using them. And then sometime last fall, they announced they were shutting for ever.
Good.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was just a pain in the butt or if they just sort of like part of their natural retirement plan has been to not do the feed anymore. So that's, you know, there's no way to know that for sure. How was your trip to the processor this week?
It was fun.
What did you discover while you were there?
We did end up in a lengthy conversation about various different things from bottle babies to FDA regulations to I have the name and phone number for a new pork source in Crossville. So I actually kind of want to give that dude a call and see if I can go check his place out.
I do have a pre-order in for some pork from a friend of ours, though.
Yes.
So just be aware.
Yes.
So we're not going to be raising pigs anytime soon. And that means we buy pigs from other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll be curious to hear who that is. There's another guy who I met through Imani and River down at Haven Earth, whose name I'm not remembering right now, but I had him on my show and he raises pork too.
Yeah.
So, but I think he's mostly selling, it's Mangalistas, I believe, and he's selling mostly the pigs and not the meat.
Yeah, that's another reason we're going to have to actually call this dude and see exactly what his process is.
Yeah, makes sense. But what I found is, like, this particular processor that we've recently started working with, they're connectors. So the first time I was there and hung out and talked to him, I started getting phone calls for lamb. Yeah. Although I think people died when they heard my prices because they were hoping for $1 a pound lamb, but that's not what we're raising here. Like, I could do that maybe on grain in a confined environment with dewormer, and I'm not doing that. So, and then also I don't have any stock available for people to buy till October. So of course we're taking deposits now for October, and we're half sold out at this point. But I mean, I launched that before I knew exactly how many lambs we were going to have, and I just guessed, and I was within one correct.
Yeah.
So one of those cannot make it, and we still have enough for what's listed on the website. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm already dealing with every time I take the four-wheeler in and out of the pasture, the sheep have completely destroyed in front of the barn. So my tires come out completely caked in mud, and it's basically duck and cover, slam the throttle, and sling all of the mud off of the tires when I first get back onto the asphalt. So, yes, the thought of having sheep confined year-round, never, ever, ever will I do that.
I know somebody who did that and didn't have mud problems.
Okay.
And the way they did it is they had well-developed pasture, and it was a big pasture that was fenced. And The grass just didn't get beat up like that, but they fed grain and hay in a barn. And so the sheep just didn't, I mean, they kind of nibbled on some grass, but they mostly just ate the grain and the hay.
Yeah. And so, if somebody else wants to do it, they've got the infrastructure to do it. Cool. I don't.
They had three ewes and then whatever babies, and then they processed the babies.
Yes,
and the occasional visiting ram.
They were also running a very small head count.
Yeah, so it was a small head count. But that's the way, if you're going to do backyard meat, I think, and you have a full-time job and don't have like the capacity to be rotating your sheep, that's the way to do it. And then the problem there is you're going to have parasite load.
Yeah.
So you have to keep an eye on that. And even with that, I don't know that I'd go preventative. I think I would do the FAMSHA, or however you say that, score, where you look at under their eyelids and you look at their gums and then you look at their body condition and you give them a rating. And if they start looking anemic or they lose too much weight, you then have to assess them for parasites and then you make decisions based on that.
Yeah.
Which I don't do that faithfully with our sheep, but I do every time I get my hands on one, I'm like, hey, let's look at all your parts. Little sheep does not like it when I peel her eyelids back, by the way. Just for the record. I mean, like, she'll let me do just about anything except for the eyelid thing really ticks her off. And I'm like, listen, the one thing I really need to do is look at the color of your eyelid to see if you're getting anemic, because she's the one I'd be most worried about being susceptible because she did not grow up on mother's milk.
Yeah.
So anyway, but she's the one who's easiest to catch, except for the little boys you're feeding.
Yeah, they're definitely getting to the point to where once they realize that I'm there and what time it is, the bigger one comes straight over to me. The little one figures it out.
It's like, wait, where'd my brother go?
And then immediately realizes, oh, that's what's up.
The little one's the one that lived in my living room for 4 days.
Yeah.
At night.
And then the big one also is consuming a lot more milk, but he sucks at it.
Yeah.
The little one, once he's onto the bottle, it's like he eats what he wants and then he's done and he walks off.
Yeah. We actually probably could get them to bucket. And the only issue is other sheep might drink in particular.
My concern with a bucket is not other sheep drinking it. It's as soon as you put that bucket out there, every sheep over there and every dog over there is going to be curious. Poke, prod, this, that, the other, scratch your back on it until it gets knocked over.
Yeah.
Or destroyed. Or
I think farmers who do that probably keep their babies separate from the rest of the herd.
Yeah.
And like, we're getting the benefit by leaving them on their mom of the mom is raising them. And we're just supplementing what they're not getting enough of. But they're learning how to be sheep with the sheep. A lot of people will completely separate the babies from the mothers, bottle feed them, and then milk the mothers, for example.
And that was actually part of the conversation that I had yesterday, was the fact that they have a really expensive, large pet cow.
Yeah.
That nobody wants to actually kill, but it also does not know how to be a cow.
Because they raised it on a bottle?
Because it was bottle raised, started in the living room, went to the basement, went to the front porch, and then eventually ended up. And so, like, the cow does not understand the concept of go out and eat grass.
So what can you as a new homesteader learn from this? When you need to take care of animals and you end up with one in your living room, like, have a thought on how you're going to get that animal back with the other animals and out of your living room as quickly as possible, so that it's not too socialized to you. Even though it makes them easier to handle, it's actually kind of a pain in the neck too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not even, for me, it's not even so much the socialization part. It's more of as much time as that animal can spend around its own kind, learning how to be a sheep and not a dog or a living room pet. The better.
But other people try to get bottle lambs so they can have a pet.
Well,
but that's not what we're doing here. So Rewilder's saying, I'm sorry, been moving. Are you milking sheep? No, we're not milking sheep. I think when little sheep gives birth, we may teach her to be milked. so that we can get colostrum from sheep in the freezer and some back stock of actual sheep milk for future. But the type of sheep we're raising are not also, I don't know that they'd be large enough producers to bother with.
Yeah.
You know, and I think about, I don't know much about milk sheep. I know about milk goats and that some goats produce better tasting and more volume. And then I assume there's something like that. Now I'm going to go down that rabbit hole on sheep after this just to see. But not milking sheep. There are other people who milk sheep, but we have one who's not producing enough milk, so we're augmenting it. And then that sort of brought up the discussion of how we're keeping those little guys with their mom anyway, so they learn from her how to eat grass and how to butt heads with each other and all the things that sheep do.
Based on observation of our sheep, if they have twins, I wouldn't even bother trying to milk one of them because I don't think there's going to be enough.
Yeah. Well, okay, cool. That's all I've got for today, guys. If you like the show and want to support the work I'm doing here, you can do it in two ways. One, get your coffee at hollowroast.com. I'm in my smiley face mug today. Also, you can consider becoming a member. Find out more about that at livingfreeintennessee.com. We're actually going to start moving all of our training materials off of livingfreeintennessee.com onto a new website. I've just decided that trying to integrate the membership portal with the classes is not working well enough. So I don't know that Tom has seen my email saying, why don't we just put it on this other site? But he's probably going to say, like, yeah, that would make my life a lot easier. So I'm guessing that's going to launch really soon. Anyway, with that, guys, go out, make it a great week.